studying British popular music. Welcome then to this class in studying British popular music. Notice the precise title, British popular music. Now, popular music, we talked about that. You know, is it popular? Is it art music? There's no exact line, but we're expecting certain things from popular music. We're expecting it to encourage emotional abandon. We're expecting it to have some subaltern content, frequently some subaltern content from the streets, from ordinary people. That's what we're expecting. We're expecting it to be, in the case of popular music, very much organised around being young, youth, energy, and the body. Because we often think that pop music talks about ordinary life, but there's a million things in ordinary life that pop music never talks about. I'm interested because, of course, quite understandably, in the university, when I walk down the corridors and I just listen to people's conversations, there are a lot of conversations about exams and marks. Of course, it's not. First of all, it's an easy thing to talk about it because you all have it in common. And if there's some, you're not very close to them. What are you going to talk to them about? You're not going to tell them about your sex life. So you talk about your marks. Normally, there are almost zero pop songs, or rock songs, or rap songs about marks and exams. But marks and exams are a big part of young people's lives. And that I'm not saying that they're on zero, there's never zero. But it's interesting that whereas, for example, love. There's a million songs about love. There's a million songs. There's also very, very little popular music about work. There is, it does exist. But talking about working, whereas in fact, even, at your age when you're still studying, a lot of you also have a job. And some very interesting things happen at work, sometimes good things, often bad things. Popular music chooses particular areas of experience. It likes to be melodramatic. Yeah, you don't write pop songs to say, "My darling, you are more beautiful than average." So of course you are. She is the most beautiful, or it was the worst situation, of course. We also get this in cinema and television. If you put on a film at random on the television, you will not be surprised if there's a murder. No. However, if you just phone up a friend and say, "Oh, what happened to you today?" you'll be very surprised if there's a murder. There are more of them. I hope so. I don't know what kind of friends you have, but I hope so. Okay, so first of all, all these ideas about popular, which are not easy questions. Secondly, British. So that's, again, another thing, Just like the street arts, is British music disappearing? Is it all international now? And if it is international, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think there is still something British, but there is also international music. Of course, these last few years, you had some incredible things like K-pop. I mean, if you go back in time 20 years and you ask people, how popular do you think Korean popular music will be in 20 years? They say, "What? Where is Korea?" So there's some very surprising things that happen in popular music, K-pop. You get a little bit of J-pop now, but it's... it was unlikely. I think K-pop was tremendously unlikely. So is it British? Well, I will show that, interestingly enough, if you look at the top 20 in Britain, the top 20 best-selling, British songs still have a big space. There's plenty of American, but there's a lot of British. However, in Britain, you can't sell popular music which is not in English. If you are the best French rapper or rocker, you won't sell in Britain. There are a very small number of exceptions. Who's the Daft Punk, of course. We could list the 10 exceptions, and the reason we could list the 10 exceptions is because there are 10 and not 500. Yeah. This goes back a long way that it has to be in English, and this is partly because the British have always considered the lyrics extremely important, which of course has to be less the case in France because a lot of the songs we listen to in France, even if you have some English, quite often you don't understand because it's weird. And finally, studying, as I explained, unfortunately, I'm not paid enough to be a disc jockey. I'm just a historian. And so what we will be looking about how you study popular music, because, of course, you know, you can listen to music on Spotify all weekend. You don't need the government to pay me a salary to do that. And so we've got key terms. Oh, key terms. We've got lots of key terms here. That it will take me half an hour to go through these key terms. These are key terms for studying popular music. Some of them are easy that you understand. Industry, the pop music industry. Okay, you can do that. And some of them you have never heard in your life before. And one of them I invented, which is nice. That's what when you're a researcher, you like to invent a concept. You don't do it very often because it's not easy. But I invented one of them. You don't have to guess which one I invented. So first of all, number one, genre. Notice that this word, in the French word genre, has two translations. If it's masculine and feminine, it's gender. And if it's rock, reggae, rap, it's genre. Yeah, so we use the word. We don't consider it to be a French word in English. We just call it genre. So genre is tremendously important because there are millions of pop songs. If you use the widest term, you know, including rap and reggae and punk, and there are millions. And so the problem with millions of things is it's impossible to talk about. What can you say about millions of songs? And this is why we often divide them into genre. So, you know, let me tell you about rap, let me tell you about reggae, let me tell you about heavy metal, folk music, music hall, brass bands, prog rock, glam rock, Bhangra, Rai. Now, we have to do this if we're going to talk about music, we have to do this. However, the frontiers are not always very clear. And indeed, if you can imagine yourself as a teenager in the 1970s, I know this is difficult, but if you can imagine yourself as a teenager in the 1970s, you can spend many, many hours arguing whether this band is really punk or not really punk. And I'm sure you can do this today. Yeah. Whether it's, if you take a rapper and you have two friends and one of them says, that's commercial rap. And the other said, no, it's not commercial rap, it's authentic rap. And you could argue for 6 hours or 10 hours or 12 hours, which is one of the activities connected. There are many activities connected to popular music. I'll come back to that in a moment. So the genre we use, genre values. Now, this is the idea that genres of music often put forward particular values, particular moral or aesthetic or ethical values. For example, gangster rap will tend to put forward the idea, a sort of bling-bling idea, a sort of anti-police idea. These would be typical. Yeah? This is the genre values. Now, they're not universal, but they're typical. And if you want to write a song to say that the police are violent and you hate the police, it's difficult to write a country music song about that. Now, that's because it goes against the genre values. These are not absolutes. I have an example because there's a, what kind of music was it? Dance music, a dance group called Heaven 17. What if I can find it? That would be great. A dance music group called Heaven 17. And what do they normally, they did sing, this is the 80s, I think, and they did sing, lots of rhythm, of course. What you expect them to sing about in that the genre values, the typical genre values are Saturday night, it's a party, the girls are beautiful, the boys are beautiful, yeah, we're all having a good time together, friendship is important, this kind of thing. But occasionally, not very often, but occasionally people can do other things, and here is an example. I wish the university would subscribe to YouTube. Attends, je vais essayer de trouver avec les paroles même. Because even if you see the lyrics written down, it's not that easy. There you go. Thank you. Sorry, I thought I was getting the lyrics, and I'm not, am I? I'm not getting the lyrics. I thought I was getting the lyrics. That's just something. That's something people have, and for it. Nope. Yep. There you go. Oh no, that's somebody else singing it. Okay, forget it. just listen to it at the first version. Okay. We're not going to listen all the way through, but yeah, I think you get the idea. Okay, so you see the idea. So an anti-fascist song. Normally, if you're going to write a political anti-fascist song, you would expect to be writing a punk song, or perhaps a folk song. Dance songs, this is not what you're supposed to. And it's also quite amusing how they go. He said, "Hitler digs that funky stuff. It's not for you and me, babe." So there's a kind of joke, really, that fascism is presented as a bad way of dancing. What is interesting about it was extremely popular at a time when the far right was beginning to rise in Britain. So this is an exception. It's going against the genre values, but it's occasional. There are not very many. Genre constraints is the same idea. There are some things it's very difficult to do. If you want to write a song about how much you love your grandma, a punk song might be quite difficult. Yeah, it's not what people are expecting. Yeah, it's perhaps a pop song would be more appropriate. Notice that when I'm talking about popular music, when I'm talking about studying popular music, I'm talking about studying all popular music, not just the music I like or the music you like. Yeah. If a lot of people listen to it from the point of view of a researcher, we're interested in it because we want to know why they like it. Yeah. Whereas very often, if you look at books about popular music, there are a million books about Leonard Cohen and Bob Dylan and Janis Joplin and greats, and very few books about music which is listened to by millions of people for a reason. Now, of course, you're entitled to think it's a good or a bad reason. So genre constraints is the same idea. That if you want to write a particular kind of song, then you can't. Now, these change from time to time. For example, country music, for a very long time, was considered to be pretty conservative. Yeah, well, you're sitting, you're all white, you're sitting on the porch. There are black people around, but you don't talk about them. You're sitting on the front page in your rocking chair. Your wife is making the dinner, and you're singing. Okay. But in the last 20 years, there's been a lot of alt-country, very radical gay country music and radical country music. So they can always change. One of my favourites is a brass band. You know the brass band, Les Cuivres? Les groupes de Cuivres. Now, that's generally pretty traditional. You expect them to play Handel's Messiah or stuff. But there's a group in Toulouse that play punk music with their brass band. And they brought out an album called God Save the Cuivres, which I had a certain style. Anyway, genre constraints. The next one, mass activity. Now, mass activity is very important because popular music, when you study it, is not just lyrics and music. It's also a whole load of mass activities that people do. Going to concerts, dancing, listening in the metro, or in the buses. These have changed. 100 years ago, what was typical to do with popular music? Would anybody like to try? Would like to tell me? 100 years ago, in Britain, but also in France, what did you typically do with popular music? Sing along. Yes, sorry? Yeah. You were going to be correct. Sing along. In the theatre, music hall, everybody sings the chorus together. This is not surprising because people didn't have a radio. Most people didn't have a record player. And in Britain, the dance halls, you know, going out to dance was fairly new for most people. You know, the bourgeoisie did it, but in the 1950s, what was typical was to dance. to dance as couples dancing. And today, perhaps what is typical is to listen to it on your own with headphones. Looking at music is looking at the mass activities go. That's important because 100 years ago, the most important thing was singing along. The way that they wrote the songs was affected by the fact that they knew that what people wanted to do was to sing along. So, for example, whereas in today, you can write a song and sing a song, and perhaps people can't really hear the lyrics. That's okay. That's acceptable. But that was not acceptable 100 years ago. Of course, then you get lack of understanding between generations. Because in 1940, the young people went out to dance, and their parents said, "That's not music. You can't sing along to it." Yeah. And then 40 years later, with rock and roll. Or then punk rock and so on, then the old people say, "Well, you can't dance in a couple to punk rock, that's not music." And then, of course, rap, the next generation, "That's not music." Why? Because there's no guitar, or whatever. Yeah, we're very limited. It is extremely generational. It's not unusual for young people like you to like the same television series as your parents. But loving the same music is not typical. It can happen, and it's not typical, and certainly my daughter listens to stuff I don't listen to. People are very often attached to the music which became popular when they were 15 to 25. Now, it would need studying to know exactly why that is. Now, okay, everybody likes the period when you're 15 to 25 because you're younger, in better health, and cuter in general. Yeah. So, you know, it always seems like a good when you have to, you will find this out later. Okay, alienation. Now, alienation, in the sense I'm using here, is a Marxist idea. And it's the idea that capitalism doesn't allow us to control our lives. It doesn't allow us to control our work, particularly. So, even though life was very hard 500 years ago, if your job was to make tables 500 years ago, you made a table and you sold it to Mrs. Smith, and she told you if you liked the table or not. You had a personal relationship with your work, or you were in agriculture, and the same thing, you looked after your cows, or you had a close relationship with your work. Well, of course, today you may well be just screwing in the same screw on a washing machine, and you will never know if the washing machine made life really easier for somebody. It probably did, but you'll never know. If this is alienation, separation. And even if you have a prestigious and well-paid job like mine, nevertheless, you know, you just see another 100 students every year, and you never know if that you never know. Occasionally they tell you that they thought it was interesting, not very often, but you never know if you know what happens to them later. You're not supposed to know. You're just supposed to do what you're told to do and continue. So this is the idea of alienation, that there are so many things in our lives which we don't control, and therefore, to compensate, we like to have little bits of our lives we can control. And very often, popular music feels like it belongs to us. Now, this can be because it's quite easy to make. Yeah, if you like rap, you can do your own rap. You can do your own. Okay, you need to work a bit. The same with punk rock. You make a band in your garage. Yeah. When I was 17, I was part of a punk rock band. It was a very typical punk rock band. One, it was very bad. Two, we had three rehearsals and never had a concert. This was absolutely typical. There were 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 bands like that. Yeah. But popular music often feels like our own. Which brings me on to the idea of effective alliances. An effective alliance is a group of people who you feel close to because of music. So, for example, if you go to a concert... Is that good to light something up? Oh, it ought to. Yes. If you go to a concert and you're all like singing along together, and there's a feeling of community. Now, in fact, you don't know anything about the other people, but you have an effective alliance. And this can be otherwise. You can be a fan of Ed Sheeran, and you feel that there are lots of fans of Ed Sheeran, so you feel like they're your community. Or you could be, of course, but this can be very weak or very strong. It can be very strong. You can say, you know, that you are a folky or a metalhead or a reggae, whatever, a reggae lover. this can be something you like to do on a Saturday, or it can be something you want to show people every day and wear, for example, a T-shirt. So you wear a T-shirt, or you wear clothes or hair which is linked with a kind of music. It's all right. had to happen. It's an interesting point, though. How many people have somewhere a T-shirt with something to do with popular music on it? Okay, so quite a few. Okay, and that's very interesting, because many people really love the series The Crown. Yeah. Who has a T-shirt? Nobody has a T-shirt. There is something very specific about popular music. It's all the same thing. If you're making friends with somebody, and then I can't really be friends with them. They don't like metal music, you know. Now, that might seem a little extreme, but we understand that. But nobody ever says, they don't like John Grisham. I can't be friends with them, you know. And so there is something very, very special. Now, why should music be very special? I mean, one is it's very physical. Music is very physical, especially if you sing along, which we do sing along, sometimes when nobody can see us. So you're actually using your breathing and your mouth and your body if you're dancing. So it's very, very physical compared with, say, reading novels or watching the television. It's very implicatory. But there's a lot of things we don't know about it. But that's the idea of effective alliances, is the idea of an imagined community, which can be generational, of course. And of course, people my age, that is to say, very, very old, they usually say, it's very common for them to say that today's young people's music is bad. This is not absolutely true. It's not absolutely everybody, but it's a very common idea, very common. It feels like they feel like they ought to. Now, I'm fortunate because I'm a historian, so I'm studying at the moment for a conference in Strasbourg. Have I already told you this? I'm comparing the top 10 of 1921 with the top 10 of 2021. That's my paper to compare the two. And so for people who think that today's music is no good, 1921. If you take anybody you know, your parents or grandparents, and if they don't like today's music, they would prefer to listen to today's music than music from 1921. Because it is extremely unsophisticated musically. It is really, you know, di-dum, 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 di-dum. Di-dum, 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 di-dum. It's like, you can't listen to it for very long. Whereas today's music, you know, whether you like it or not, it's actually quite sophisticated. There you go. Now, on to the next one, participatory theatre. Now, this is the idea which I invented. So I'm not yet famous for this. I probably never will be, but there you go. And this is this. You see that in my opinion, a popular song is a form of participatory theatre. So, for example, if we just take a very simple idea. Yeah, one of the early Beatles songs, I Want to Hold Your Hand. A very, very simple, simple example. Now, first of all, it is very much about singing along. And secondly, it's very much about the individual who is listening imagining themselves in the position of the narrator. So, you know, it's kind of fun. Yeah, I want to, oh, this sweet, yeah, that reminds me of that person whose hand I wanted to hold, you, or whatever. Yeah. Of course, things are very negative, things very different for other songs, you know, like, you know, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. Extremely well-known song. And of course, we sing along, and it's a sentiment. It works because everybody knows what that feels like. And so, in some ways, what the singer is trying to do, if I'm a songwriter, I'm saying now, what kind of person do millions of people want to pretend to be for 3 minutes? That's one way. It's not the only way of looking at a pop song, but it's one way. Yeah. And sometimes a very new song, a very different song, is different and new because they've imagined a new narrator a new kind of now. And punk rock is the perfect idea, because in rock and roll, you know, the Beach Boys, you know, I Get Around, and the narrator in rock and roll is a successful young man who all the girls love. And that's what, you know, none of the boys go steady, because it wouldn't be right to leave the best girls standing on a Saturday night, you know. Yeah, we have no problem, we have all the girls we want, we have a big car. That's a very rock and roll narrator. And punk rock invented the loser as a narrator. Yeah, we're so pretty vacant and we don't care. Nous avons la tête vide, on s'en fout. And many, many, many more punk songs where the narrator is the loser. There's one about my cousin Kevin, very great. It's about, and it's a fabulous song, punk song. And it's just about, I have a cousin called Kevin, and he gets really good marks at school, and he's going to be a doctor, and he has a lovely girlfriend, and I hate him. Yeah, which very, 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 very new. What was new about punk was the new narrator. And of course, gangster rap has a particular narrator. Sometimes, you know, most people who love the more aggressive forms of rap about the police are not people who every night go and fight the police. No, but it might be people who like to imagine themselves in this situation. This is the idea of participatory theatre. Now, this affects our tastes, because if you don't like the idea of pretending you're a loser, you might not like punk. If you don't like the idea of pretending that the old times were better, then you might not like folk. Yeah. What the music we like is partly about the values and not just about the music. This is very difficult because, of course, people often do not know why they like things. They're not paid for that. Oh, authenticity. Authenticity, this is a great one. Because almost everybody agrees. If you take, for example, rock singers, you know, in the I use rock in the widest sense. There's a singer, a guitar, and drums, it's rock. Very, very wide definition. So Ed Sheeran is rock, just as the Beatles are rock. Almost everybody agrees that some rock musicians are purely commercial and other rock musicians are authentic. Almost everybody, if I say that some pop musicians are authentic and others are just commercial, most people say, yeah, that's true. However, if I try to write the list of who is commercial and who is authentic, then nobody agrees at all. Yeah. Now, this is a very important idea, authenticity. This does not mean that it really exists. It's a kind of appearance. And it is extremely important in popular music. For example, there is a huge change in France from the 60s to the 50s to the 70s. In the 50s, some people wrote their own songs, and other people did not write their own songs, and nobody cared. But there's a whole section of rock where you're supposed to write your own songs. If you don't write your own songs, that's not so good anymore. And why? Something about the songs really authentically coming from your soul, or it's a kind of spiritual idea, yeah? Authenticity. They always say, you know, the most important thing is authenticity. So if you can fake that, you're fine. Yeah. So authenticity is a very problematic idea. It's an idea which is very important to people who love music and very important to musicians, but that doesn't mean it necessarily really exists. And it's the same thing of being commercial. Of course, you know, many types of music, not all. Say, oh yeah, well, I don't want it to be just commercial. On the other hand, if you have your first concert and nobody comes, then you're going to have to get a job at the petrol station instead of making an album. Yeah, so you have to be a little bit commercial. You have to find an audience. Legitimacy. Now, legitimacy is very different. So authenticity is very much connected with the relationship between the public and the singer. How they see them as really representing. Oh yeah, sometimes you have to be socially authentic. For example, if you're going to sing rap about poverty, you're supposed to come from a poor family. Now, this is not the case of every rapper, of course, but it's ideal. If you don't, can you pretend you came from a poor family? That can be done as well. You know, sometimes you can do it. It's supposed to be There are other things as well. I mean, there are songs about. I remember there's a great singer who wrote, what was it, My Name is Luca, I Live on the Second Floor, Suzanne Vega. And she sang about domestic violence, and I think I'm correct that somebody criticised her because she didn't have personal experience of it. Because this is about authenticity, yeah? which is a conversation. And again, if you discuss, of course, from the point of view of studying, if you discuss authenticity, we're not very interested in whether you think somebody's authentic or not. It's just you understand why some people think they are or are not. I had another thing to say about authenticity. Yeah, it's a similar idea. You know, if I want to write a song where the narrator is a woman who is suffering from sexual violence, people might say, "Hey, you're a man. Why are you writing that?" You know, that might come into the questions of legitimacy. Of authenticity. Legitimacy is different. Legitimacy is how does popular music get treated by the establishment and by the authorities? Yeah. If you open up the University of Hull webpage and you say, "Oh yeah, I want to do a degree in rock music." Well, I can't find it. Because popular music still has problems of legitimacy. Now, it's much more legitimate than it could be. You can do a degree in popular music in Liverpool, in Bristol. There are about 20 in Britain. I think there's one in France. So it's a problem. Whereas I think, you know, I don't think it's very controversial. I mean, of course, you can study popular music well or badly, but it's obviously complicated enough for people to study. And indeed, in the case of Britain, the industry, it's a huge industry which makes billions of pounds. And the pop music industry in Britain wants people to do doctorates about pop music because the things they need to understand, yeah? I didn't do my doctorate on pop music, but I did my HDR, I did my Habilitation en Dirigé de Recherche on the popular music from the First World War. I think I mentioned this to you. Yeah. There are not many people interested in popular music in the First World War, but I wrote the only book about it. There you go. I will be famous among a very, very small group of people. This has happened occasionally. I went to a conference, somebody and somebody came and said, "Are you Jan Mullen?" Because this was somebody who was mad about popular British music from the First World War. It doesn't happen very often, unfortunately. I don't get recognised in the streets. What can you do? So legitimacy, there's different forms of that. For example, if you take a respected newspaper like Le Monde or The Times, 50 years ago they didn't write about popular music. And today they do. So there's been a big change in legitimacy. In the government, for example, if you wanted to, you know that in Britain, the Queen regularly gives people, regularly give people medals. Just like in France, you give them the Légion d'honneur. In Britain, they give them the CBE or the OBE or a knighthood. And 50 years ago, nobody got one for popular music. And today they do. Yeah, so the legitimacy is on the rise. Technology, obviously, changes quickly. So the arrival in the 1970s of the keyboards which can imitate a violin, imitate a trumpet, obviously transformed popular music, and the drum machine. Technology always transforms popular music. In the 50s, if you wanted 100 people to dance, you had to have a live band, because the gramophones were not amplified enough. Whereas once you got good amplifiers at sometime in the 1970s, then you could have 300 people dancing, and it was much cheaper because you didn't have to pay 15 people to play music. Yeah. So the technology changed. A last example, music hall 100 years ago, they had no microphones. They had a theatre with 3,000 people in it, and they had no microphones. So there were no intimate voices. Yeah? No intimate voices, and therefore very little romantic music. Because, you know, if you want to sing a romantic song and there's 3,000 people and you don't have a microphone, it's not so easy. It's easier to sing a comic song where everybody will sing along the chorus. industry, well, industry is obvious. It is a huge industry in Britain, more in Britain than elsewhere. Actually, Britain, for a small country, has managed to come out. I mean, especially if you go back to certain decades, like if you take the 1970s, I'm sure, I'm not going to do it, but I'm sure I could get you to name 20 British groups of the 1970s, no problem. Would anybody like to name 20 Portuguese groups or Italian groups? Yeah, you see the problem. Yeah, they, it really has been. Britain has managed to now why historians are only really interested in questions like why. So why should Britain do very well? Well, it might be because we're all wonderfully creative, artistic, but it might not. It might not. I suspect that one of the reasons is that it's extreme. It is pubs. It is extremely easy to find a room to do a concert in a city in Britain. Extremely easy. There's every pub has a room upstairs. And in my opinion, the only way of having 100 good groups is to have 10,000 bad ones. That's my opinion. The final key idea here is palimpsest. Oh no. And I'm going to talk about that next week because I just wanted to show you one last video and it takes 18 minutes. And we only have 18 minutes, so I better go. This is a talk I gave.
Bonjour, salut. Good afternoon, everyone. Pardon, mon français, c'est terrible. Je peux parler un peu de français, mais c'est assez mauvais que ne parle tout.
I want to look at the fact that Nick quite well with what Jedediah was saying, because he was
beginning to sort of bet.
Thank you. Well, I'm just going to try to share my PowerPoint with the PowerPoint. Can you see it? Okay, there we go. Right, well, this picture is what I was saying.